Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, October 6, 2020, producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Well, yesterday, before the playoffs began, the division series that everybody's been talking about, Theo Epstein, head of baseball operations for the Chicago Cubs, talked about a transition in his role with the Cubs. He just reiterated his longstanding belief that about a decade of service time for an organization might be enough for him, and he signaled major changes to come for the Cubs on the field. We'll be talking about that with David Schoenfield and Paul Ambiquides. General Manager David Stearns of the Milwaukee Brewers says the Milwaukee Brewers payroll might have to be trimmed. We've been talking about the fallout from having no fans in the stands this year and how some teams may be pulling their payroll back under baseball's new financial landscape. Keep in mind that the Brewers' payroll, prorated payroll in 2020 was about $110 million, 24th in the majors. So for David Stearns to suggest now that the payroll might have to come down tells you how, for the Brewers and probably a lot of other teams, major concerns ahead. The Rays and the Yankees began their division series yesterday. And before all that started, the Rays announced that Austin Meadows, who was on the injured list for an oblique issue, was added back onto the roster. He'd been on the injured list since September 18th with a grade 2 left oblique strain. The first game of the day yesterday, Astros and the Athletics. Chris Bassitt versus Lance McCullers Jr. And right away, we got the theme for the day.
Swinging a high fly ball. That one is deep to right field. Backing up Tucker, backing up, and kiss it goodbye. That's gone. Chris Davis, that was on cue, Jim, as he blasts a two-run homer, and there's the walk and the big fly the way the A's do it.
Dave O'Brien on ESPN Radio. Alex Bregman would answer back for Houston in the top of the fourth.
1-2 swing. He hung that one. A high fly ball left field deep. Grossman's back to the track. Leaps up. He can't get it. That ball is gone. Home run for Alex Bregman on a hanger, and he knocked it out of here to put the Astros on the scoreboard. That makes it 3-1 Oakland in the fourth inning.
Houston's rally would continue.
The pitch. Swing at a high fly ball. He jacked that one deep to center. That's way back. Back it goes. Gone! Home run! Carlos Correa. He has tied the ball game. Man, is it flying here today in the Southern California heat. And this is a 3-3 game. Second home run in the inning for Houston.
There would be another home run in the inning in the bottom of the fourth.
Swinging a high fly ball into center field. That's well hit. Carrying, Springer's back to the wall. And it is gone, a home run. Another one leaves the yard. Olson, who had 14 during the regular season. The A's didn't like trailing at all, and they're back in front 4-3 on another that gets out of the ballpark at Dodger Stadium.
Oakland had the lead in the top of the sixth inning, but an error by Marcus Semien extended the Houston inning. And then inevitably, this is what happened.
And a 2-1 to Altuve. Swing and a line drive into left field down for a base hit. Another run is in. Up and gunning Grossman. Here's the throw home and not in time. And a big, big hit off the bat of Jose Altuve as he jumped all over it. And he has put them in front with a two-run single.
In the top of the seventh inning, Carlos Correa applied the coup de grace.
1-1 swing at a high fly ball center field deep. Laureano's back at the track, leaping, gone, a home run. Another one for Correa, his second of the day. That's his 14th playoff home run at the age of 26. That's a record. And the Astros bolster their lead now 8-5 over the A's in the seventh inning.
And they go on and win 10-5. Houston leading now that best-of-five series 1-0. After the game, Carlos Correa talked about his day.
You know, throughout the year, I was trying to find my power stroke, and I couldn't seem to find it. I was looking back at videos at 2017, and then when we were at the Rangers, Cintron told me, let's look at 2015 when you got in the big leagues and you were, you know, doing great. I said, all right. So, you know, we saw a couple of things on the video. My hand position, the way I position my body, And it was completely different to what I was doing throughout this year. Kept working on it, came today, was able to hit two homers. And, you know, it definitely feels great to have a guy like Cintron next to you, paying attention to every single detail in order for you to succeed out there. So, yeah, I'm very grateful to have him as my hitting coach. He's great.
Last evening, Yankees and Rays, game one of their series. You got a feel for how this game was going to go right in the first inning when DJ LeMahieu opened up with a 9-pitch at bat before singling to start the game. The Yankees took a lead. But in the bottom of the first inning, Gerrit Cole on the mound for the Yankees. The Rays fought back.
2-0 on the way, and a fastball to Arozarena's drilled to center field. Well hit. Hicks going back. Hicks at the wall. Gone! Arozarena with a home run to straightaway center field, and the Rays have tied it at one.
Dan Shulman on ESPN Radio. Now, Aaron Boone, the manager of the Yankees, had to make a decision. Do you start Clint Frazier? Do you start Brett Gardner? Do you start the veteran? Or do you start the young guy with the lightning quick bat? Well, in the top of the third inning, Clint Frazier justified Aaron Boone's decision to start him.
The 1-0 to Frazier, the Yankee left fielder, and he swings and hammers one to left field. He got on top of a high fastball and hit it a mile up into the second deck for a home run to give the Yankees a 2-1 lead. What a swing that was.
He absolutely hammered it. Later, Blake Snell would face Frazier with the bases loaded.
Snell nods in agreement with Zunino and now straightens up and comes set. And the 2-2 on the way, and a swing and a miss. Got him on a slider up at the belt to strike him out. Maybe a mistake pitch by Snell, but he gets away with it, and the Yankees will leave the bases loaded.
Snell would require 84 pitches over five high-stress innings, and he was out of the game. And over the last four innings, the Yankees hitters would see 92 pitches. Well, in the bottom of the fourth inning, this really weird dynamic between one of the Rays hitters and Gerrit Cole played out. Somebody who does a ton of damage against Gerrit Cole.
He is not going in the 1-1, a fastball to Choi, and it is well hit. Left center field, and it is gone. What a shot by Choi. His fourth career home run off Gerrit Cole, and the Rays take a 3-2 lead.
G-Man Choi just beats up on Gerrit Cole, and I read a note from ESPN Stats Information today that Choi's home runs have come on different pitches. He's got a home run off a fastball. He's got a home run off a curveball. He's got a home run off of a Gerrit Cole slider. Gerrit Cole probably wondering what the heck is going on. Well, Cole's personal catcher backed him in the top of the fifth.
1-1, and a fastball that he hits well. Left field, and it is going to go. Off the facing of the second deck, a no-doubter for Higashioka, and he's tied the game at three.
Two batters later, Aaron Judge came to the plate.
Now Judge gets a hanging breaking ball, hits it to left, and gone! A line drive over the head of Arozarena into the third row of seats. Another home run for the Yankees, and it is 4-3 New York.
The Rays would rally in the bottom of the fifth inning, loading the bases with two outs.
The set and the 1-2 right back to the high fastball. Triple digits from Cole. 100 miles an hour as he gets them swinging, and the Rays will leave the bases loaded.
And the score would hold at 4-3 into the top of the ninth inning, but Aaron Hicks added insurance.
1-2 and a swing and a ball laced into right center for a base hit. Higashioka around third. The throw to the plate is not in time.
Oh.
Boy, that was close, but Higashioka slides in safely to make it 5-3.
Next to the plate, Giancarlo Stanton.
2-2. And Stanton lifts a fly ball, center field, deep and gone. A grand slam for Stanton. And that'll blow it open here in the ninth inning. The Yankees now lead 9-3.
And that would be the final score. Stanton with a home run in each of the Yankees' three postseason games so far this year. After the game, Aaron Boone, Giancarlo Stanton talked about the day.
It's one game. We got to win three. We know they're a great team and a great opponent, and we know we got to play our best to beat them. So I don't think there's any statements or anything like that. We got to win two more, and that's going to be a challenge, and we're excited for that challenge, though.
Yeah, that was big. That was huge to come out like we did. Wearing their pitchers down the whole game, and it was huge.
Game twos of the American League Division Series will be played later today. We also are going to have the first game of the Dodgers and Padres series, the Marlins against the Cubs. And Max Fried, who starts for the Braves today, talked about getting the ball in game one.
As far as a person in the clubhouse, the intensity brings every day. But for me, I just knew that I had to go out there and just win games. I knew that when I had to take the mound that, you know, it was a we had to try to win that game. So that was kind of my mentality from it. I try not to do too much because obviously you can try to, you know, push the boundaries and kind of try to get outside of yourself. But for me, it was a lot about staying within myself, being confident, and just going out there and just trying to win a game. When I take the ball that day, my only plan is to, what do I have to do to win this game? And kind of just took that mentality for each start.
In Arlington, the Dodgers and Padres start their series today. Walker Buehler will be on the mound for the Dodgers.
I mean, I didn't throw too well against them, so it wasn't super fun for me. But, you know, obviously there's some intensity in those games. And, you know, we enjoy that. We've played in some big games in the past few years, and that intensity is always a good thing, I think. You know, those are obviously two really talented players that they got over there, but, you know, they got a good team. I don't think you can just try and beat two guys and you know, let the other seven guys run wild or whatever. So, you know, obviously it's important to not let those guys beat you, but at the same time, they've got some other guys over there that can do some damage.
Before we get to Dave Schoenfield and Paul Amichides, check out the latest episode of the CFB Pod. Herbie, Pollock, and Negandhi recap week 5 and talk about Georgia playing with an edge, Tennessee's continued improvement, Florida's offense, a vintage Mike Leake letdown, Oklahoma's loss to Iowa State, and if Tom Herman and Texas are feeling the pressure. Download and subscribe to the CFB Pod wherever you get your podcast.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Welcome to the show!
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 Welcome to the show, mate!
Welcome to the show! Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby!
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
And David Schoenfield covers baseball for ESPN, and certainly now that means talking about the division series. We're going to do that in a second, but Dave, I was fascinated, and yet nothing that was said was surprising, to hear from Theo Epstein, the head of baseball operations for the Cubs, about what's to come. You know, not only did he make it clear that there are going to be major changes for next year, as we sit here today, I don't think Kyle Schwarber will be on the team next year. I think they have a really difficult decision with Chris Bryant. You know, after talking with folks with other teams, they wonder how much trade value he would have, or if even might even incredibly be a non-tender candidate, given the where his payroll, where his salary is, and where payrolls are going around baseball. But Theo also signaling that you know, he's in the twilight of his tenure with the Cubs.
Yeah, it sounds like it. He has 1 year left on his contract, same as Bryant, Rizzo, Schwarber, and Javier Baez. So they all might be free agents after next year. But yeah, you know, you read between the lines, and it certainly sounded like he's suggesting 2021 will be his last year with the Cubs.
I'm curious about some of the on-field moves that you think that they might do. You know, I did a piece over the weekend talking with people with other teams about the Cubs' young players and how the fact is that they really haven't gotten better since winning the World Series in 2016, up and down offensive performance. What's your gut feel on Bryant, who this year made $17.5 million? He's eligible for arbitration again. As someone noted to me the other day, an evaluator with another team, can you imagine if he had won that grievance that he had against the Cubs and he had actually been able to be eligible for free agency this fall? He wouldn't have been in position to command some big whopper contract. In fact,
no,
he might be a little bit like Marcell Ozuna and have to take a one-year deal based off, you know, and again, we're not, I don't think a lot of teams would take what happened in 2020 at face value, but his performance was so bad that it would raise questions.
Yeah, look, you're right. It's only 34 games, but yeah, 206, four home runs, terrible strikeout to walk ratio. Look, all four of those guys were terrible this year. I don't know how much trade value, you know, any of them have. It makes it a really difficult decision for what the Cubs are going to do this winter. It seems pretty clear they got to, I don't want to say blow things up, but they have to make some changes. You know, so most likely, like you said, you try to get something for Schwarber, but he hit 188. You know, Bryant, as you just alluded to, very little trade value. Javier Baez, I guess you want to try to re-sign him, but he hit 203 with 75 strikeouts and seven walks. That's not sustainable as a quality major league hitter. You know, and Anthony Rizzo's the oldest of the group. You know, he'll be 31 next year. He hit 222. I don't know what you do with any four of those guys. You don't want to throw out $200 million at Javier Baez, do you? So Theo and Jed Hoyer have a really, really difficult offseason.
I also thought it was telling that David Stearns, in speaking with reporters yesterday, said, well, the Brewers might have to bring payroll back. My experience is when GMs say might, they've already made the decision to do that. Or I should say the decision's been made over their heads to bring down the payroll.
Yeah, you're not going to say that if it's not going to happen, right? And I think the Brewers, everyone would agree, probably in 2019 and this year, had certainly pushed their payroll up to its upper limit, you know, and to their credit, they went all out. They've made the playoffs, you know, I mean, this year, you know, because of the expanded number of teams. So that wouldn't shock me. And they're in a tough position. They're really not a very good team. And it certainly will help next year if Christian Yelich bounces back. And they do have a couple big starters in Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns and Josh Hader and Devin Williams in the bullpen, but no depth on that team. One of the lowest ranked farm systems. I think the Brewers are probably for a little bit of a, you know, sit tight year and maybe try to build up some depth for a couple seasons.
All right, let's spin off to the division series that began yesterday, the Yankees. They've scored 31 runs in three games in this postseason. They're hitting home runs all over the place. And it's remarkable because, you know, 10 days left, 2 weeks left in the regular season. We were talking about the slumping Yankees and are they in trouble? Well, they've got all their stars back now, and it looks like they've gone back to that old Yankee formula of wearing down pitching.
Yeah, they beat some really good pitching in their three wins. Giancarlo Stanton, of course, is homered in all three playoff games. I think that's huge. Because you know DJ LeMay was going to hit. You know Aaron Judge, even if he's not hitting home runs, is going to draw his walks. But to have Stanton, you know, I don't want to say locked in just yet, but looking good, that is huge for that lineup, and just makes it hard to get through that top five or six hitters.
We're going to be using some boxing analogies today because they always seem to apply when we talk about a big market team going up against a small market team. Watching this game last night, it did feel like a very successful middleweight going up against a heavyweight because of the star power.
Yeah, no, look, Tampa Bay, as good as they are, you're right, Buster. You know, they don't really have a star. Blake Snell won a Cy Young a couple years ago, but he hasn't been back to that level. Tyler Glasnow might be a developing star. But yeah, you look at the lineup, it's depth. You know, there's some good players, but there's no stars in that lineup. And I don't know what you thought about Kevin Cash. I think he's my manager of the year. I didn't agree with his decision to use John Curtis in the ninth inning rather than one of his top you know, three right-handed relievers. The game was still up for grabs at that point, and he let it get away from him. But on the other hand, yeah, he has all his top relievers available for today's game.
Yeah, I got some notes on that, too, from staffers with other teams. They were wondering, geez, you're down a run. It's a short series, five games. You can't concede anything. Why not use one of your main guys? And the way that I answered back was, well, these are the Rays, and they have to believe in those guys. Like John Curtis, probably for a lot of teams, is kind of a guy, you know, 27 years old, just now emerging. And yet if you're the Rays, that's your whole team.
Yeah.
It feels like they have to rely on guys like that.
Yeah, and to be fair, Curtis was really good in the regular season. You know, at the same time, he was a guy a year ago was let go by the Angels and Phillies. So, and he hasn't been used, you know, that often in high leverage situations. But I get it. And Cash said after the game, you know, he didn't want to use Anderson or Castillo or Pete Fairbanks in that situation. It didn't work out. That happens.
I also felt as I'm watching that game when DJ LeMahieu opens up the game with a 9-pitch at bat against Snell and then singles to open up. You're like, up, here we go.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. And DJ LeMahieu, he's just incredible. I mean, and Jose Abreu or Shane Bieber will probably win the MVP. And LeMahieu, though, if he hadn't missed time, you know, it might have been right up there. But he's just turned into an amazing baseball player. Just such a tough out.
What did you think of Aaron Boone's decision for today to have Davey Garcia starting for them? And that way they line up Tanaka potentially in game three and Jay Happ. You know, he could start in game four if they decide to go that route, or he could have Happ in relief today behind Garcia.
Yeah, interesting. I don't think Aaron Boone said this, but if you read between the lines, well, you know Gerrit Cole was going to go fairly deep in game one, six or seven innings. You weren't going to overuse your bullpen in game one. So Garcia probably isn't going to go deep. So that gives them a chance to burn through their entire bullpen in game two. Then you go back to Tanaka, who I know he didn't pitch well against Cleveland, but historically has been a good postseason pitcher, and you hope he can go a little deeper in game three. So I think it's a way to sort of balance how and when he's using that bullpen.
According to research by ESPN Stats and Information, the only other 21-year-old to make a postseason start for the Yankees was Whitey Ford in Game 4 of the 1950 World Series. So Davey Garcia today doing something we haven't seen very often. And I would like to say this. You know, a lot of times if, you know, a player says something untoward, he'll get a lot of attention. He'll get some criticism from us. I got a tip of the cap for Jay Happ. You know, it's clear that he really believes that the Yankees have manipulated his innings, so he's not going to reach his vesting option. And as Aaron Boone acknowledged yesterday, he has been a pro. You know, the quote from Boone was, he'll be ready. He's going to be he's going to play a big role for us like a pro, like he's handled all this year. Happ has answered the bell every time, whether he's been disappointed or whatever. It hasn't obviously affected his pitching. I that's well said to me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, he was really key during their hot stretches during the season. Look, this series is not going to be a sweep. I think we'll see Happ in game four.
All right. It does seem like the Houston Astros, who beat Oakland yesterday, they're kind of freed up mentally. Like, okay, we're villains. Go ahead. We're just going to go out and play. Carlos Correa in particular looks great, Dave.
Yeah, you know, that. I picked Oakland in that series because I kept looking at the regular season numbers. Houston only averaged 2.5 runs per game against Oakland in their 10 meetings. And they laid it on the A's bullpen yesterday. Again, I don't think Bob Melvin did anything wrong. He went to the pen early with a lead. It was the best pen in MLB during the season. They just got lit up. And, you know, if Bregman and Correa, neither of whom are that great in the regular season, get locked in. And George Springer, who always seems locked in October. And even Altuve came through yesterday. So, yeah, that looked a lot like the 2017 or 2018 or 2019 Astros lineup.
Yeah, George Springer throwing out four hits yesterday, and the Houston bullpen, I think this is one of the more remarkable things we've seen this year, because you remember those first days when they started the 60-game season where it felt like every day we'd get an update on the Astros and there would be another relief pitcher who was going down.
Yeah.
You know, somebody else was being put on the injured list with Roberto Osuna or whoever. According to the note we got overnight from ESPN Stats Information, after five scoreless innings on Monday, the Astros bullpen now has thrown 14 and two-thirds scoreless innings in their three postseason games. They've allowed three hits, struck out 15, and walked six.
Yeah, that's been the key. I mean, I remember that, too. At one point, I know they had 12 rookie relievers on their roster early in the season, and they're still six or seven, I think, on the postseason roster. But as we saw yesterday, even the guys we've never heard of, Eynoly Paredes, these guys have great arms. And then you got Ryan Presley's a pretty good closer to lock down the ninth. Houston, I know they were under 500, but this does not look like a 500 team right now.
So this is kind of a fun, interesting thing to think about. The Astros and the Athletics are staying in the same hotel. Can you imagine what it would be like if Mike Fiers were to bump into some of the Astros players? What do you think it would look like right there?
So you're telling me if they're in line at Starbucks in the morning that Carlos Correa is not buying Mike Fiers an iced latte?
Yeah, I think that they're all aware of the fact. The Astros probably know that if somebody got really upset and started throwing punches, that would probably get much more attention that they really want. Yeah. I suspect that if this happens, if they happen to bump into each other, it would kind of be a stare down. That would be my guess.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to have a whole lot of words. I know, and you wrote about it, I wrote about some of the bad blood in the playoffs, but teams are pretty good about not losing their cool in these big games. So I don't think we're going to see any Don Zimmer, Pedro Martinez incidents this year.
Maybe not in that series, but I do think we are going to see some stuff. I kind of wonder about the Padres and Dodgers, in part because the Padres are, celebrate so overtly. But somebody's going to get chapped at some point. I asked Tim yesterday in the podcast to rank the four division series in terms of animus. As you mentioned, you had that article yesterday talking about the history. How would you rank them?
Well, I put A's Astros number one, but yep. I think you're right. It seems like, the tension is maybe cooled a little bit there. Look, there's no doubt, with a couple of the incidents from the regular season, that Trent Grisham, the home run he hit off Kershaw and stared at it, that obviously rubbed the Dodgers the wrong way. Not so much Kershaw. He never said anything at the time, but certainly Dave Roberts and the players were not happy with showing up Kershaw. And, we've seen how Fernando Tatis, I love him. He gets excited, but he'll flip that bat and he'll flip it a long ways. And the Dodgers are not that kind of team. They don't do that kind of stuff. So, and there's a lot of pressure on LA. So if things start going south for them and the Padres are rummeted in their faces, I think you might see a few high and tight pitches for sure.
I think that's the series that's the matchup that I'm most interested to see, the Dodgers pitching to Fernando Tatis Jr. We've talked all year about how he plays with such amazing energy. And if you look at the numbers that the Dodgers have pitching has against him this year, they've held him in check. And I kind of wonder if they will do that. And, let's face it, he did play last week. But now you're talking about division series. It's the Dodgers. It's the postseason. There's more hype. There's more energy. And maybe try to use that against them by getting him to expand the strike zone.
Yeah, I agree. He hit 205 against them. Look, this is the series, when we were contemplating how this bracket might line up back at the end of September. I'm with you, Tatis. He's not a big hacker. He's not Javier Baez. But he will chase. He does have some swing and miss. So I'm with you. Certainly early on in these games, I think they're going to see if they can get him to chase. Why throw him a strike? Even though he struggled a little bit in September, we saw once he gets locked in like he did against the Cardinals, he can carry this team for five games. So make him chase, absolutely.
Last one for you. What are you looking for in the other series, the Marlins against the Braves?
Well, it's all about the young starting pitching for the Marlins if they're going to win this, because they don't have a great lineup. The bullpen's okay. So, you know, those three guys that are starting 1, 2, and 3 are really going to have to pitch well. I love that game two matchup with Ian Anderson and Sixto Sanchez. I think that's going to be the key game in that series.
All right, sir. Well, enjoy today. 4 games. It should be a lot of fun.
It will.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Bye, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
And Hembo is Paul Imbecchiti, a researcher at ESPN, who's a honcho in the show Get Up. Mike Greenberg tells us it's because he is a wild partier. Hembo, we'll start with this before we get into some of the playoff series going on. We just were talking about the question of what Theo Epstein said yesterday, what it really means about major changes with the Cubs. I will tell you that, you know, I've had conversations with evaluators with other teams who think that the Kyle Schwarber is a serious candidate to be non-tendered going into 2021, especially in light of the financial landscape and where that might go. And I actually had some high-ranking folks with other teams saying Chris Bryant is someone that they're going to have to look at, either to dump the contract, getting little in return, or a possible non-tender. Tell me about those two players and how you would handle it.
So with Schwarber, I think a non-tender is a very reasonable and legitimate option. We're talking about a player who has not grown hardly at all. He's a player that's only produced 5 wins above replacement in his entire career. And I think in the minds of some fans is this awesome hitter because of, you know, what we remember during the 2016 postseason when he came back from injury. But Buster, you know as well as I do, that's just not the player he is anymore. And given the salary that he's likely to earn next season, I'm not so sure that he has almost any value there. And I think he'd probably get a good shot playing somewhere else because there's, you know, you can always use a left-handed power bat, but I'm not so sure he's a part of the Cubs' future. As far as Chris Bryant, he is a player. This was the first year of his career in which he was not at least 20% above average as a hitter, at least as measured by OPS plus, and his defensive metrics this year were pretty good. Now, he had a terrible season. He drove in almost no runs the entire year into the final weekend, and he, along with Anthony Rizzo and Javier Baez, have not hit a lick, not a lick in the playoffs since winning the World Series. And that $25 million salary, which is something close to what I think he can expect to make next season, is a daunting task for a Cubs team if they're not, first of all, if they don't think they can compete, or if he's not potentially a part of their future. We obviously know of the animosity as it relates to he and the front office because of how they manipulated his service time. But my guess is that you could pay his arbitration salary next year and pursue a trade. And there would be a handful of teams, I would guess, out there that would be willing to pay at least 50 or 60 cents on the dollar for Chris Bryant with a proven track record as a two-way player.
All right. Let's talk about previews for series that start today. What do you got on Marlins and Braves?
Well, I think we can agree that the Braves have a far superior lineup to the Marlins and a better pitching staff top to bottom. But Miami can steal this series, Buster, on the base paths. The Marlins led the National League with 51 steals during the regular season. They converted at a 79% clip. They also went 3-for-3 in the 2 games against the Cubs, of course. Now, the Braves, they allowed 42 steals, Buster, on 47 chances during the regular season. That's an 89% clip. That was the worst of any team in the National League. That, of course, includes allowing 12 steals in 13 attempts against the Marlins, which is to say, if this actually becomes a National League series, the Marlins generated more ground ball hits than any team during the regular season. The Marlins are sort of a higher contact rate type team. My guess is that they're going to do the best they can to avoid the 3-run homer, and they're going to play this way. And the way that they've grinded all season, I'm not going to bet against them, even though the Braves are a clear favorite in my mind.
All right. What about the Padres and Dodgers?
Well, the Dodgers can pitch with anybody, but their fate in this series could be decided by a pair of left-handed hitters with postseason ghosts, those, of course, being Cody Bellinger and Corey Seager. Buster, among 525 players with at least 75 postseason plate appearances, Bellinger's strikeout rate ranks 524th. He has fanned once in every 2.8 trips to the plate in the playoffs. And the timely hit, well, that's evaded Seager during his postseason career. Seager is 4-39 with runners in scoring position and 0-4 his last 13, dating to the 2017 World Series against Houston. When combining the numbers for Bellinger and Seager in those circumstances, you get 8-74 with 30 strikeouts against 4 walks. Now, the Dodgers might be good enough to beat the Padres, even if those guys don't hit, but it would make it a whole lot easier if once in a while either of them came up with a timely hit.
Last night, the Yankees take a 1-0 lead in their series against the Rays. What do you got?
Well, the two things obviously stood out to us. The first of which was, if Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton are going to hit like this, this team is the World Series favorite. And in fact, Caesar Sportsbook by William Hill, their odds maker, they installed the Yankees as the favorite to win the World Series this morning for the first time in several months. So they see it the way that we do. The Yankees are now 10-3 and averaging 6.5 runs a game in the postseason when both Judge and Stanton are in the lineup. You can't expect them to homer every game, of course, but just their mere presence clearly makes a considerable difference. And the second thing is that even when Garrett Cole doesn't have his best stuff, he can still shove, Buster. He has 21 strikeouts in the postseason now. 20 of them are swinging strikeouts. He had 8 more last night. He struck out 3 of the last 4 batters in that game with 199-99. This guy's the best pitcher in the world. I don't want to hear otherwise. And so long as he's throwing like that and they set up the rotation appropriately, I don't see a way in which the Yankees are stopped before they reach the World Series, in which they would most likely play the Dodgers, in my judgment.
Well, they would have to go through the winner of the series between the Astros and Oakland. Houston wins yesterday. What do you got?
Well, Houston has now scored 10 of its 17 postseason runs with 2 outs. And I think that probably speaks to, in some sense, to the experience that these guys have accumulated over the last few seasons. And clearly, they are doing a really good job sort of internalizing all the anger and vitriol directed towards them and producing good results on the field as a result. I was actually very critical of the Dusty Baker hire, you might recall, but it seems like the temperament of this team and the way they're going about their business right now is exactly how they should. The A's bullpen was the best in baseball during the regular season, and they couldn't hold it together yesterday. The Astros are doing exactly what you need to in the playoff. Their bullpen's missing bats, and they're getting those timely hits. I'm not going to bet against those guys either, but I still think the A's are a better team, so I'm going to stick with that pick and think they'll pull it out.
And before you go, I'm curious about how you, being a Phillies fan, how you feel about what's going on with that organization. Matt Klentak, their general manager, steps away. John Middleton will be looking at candidates, new general manager candidates. What would you like to have? The type of guy you'd like to have? Would you like another young analytics person, or would you like an old school general manager, a guy like Brian Sabian, who of course led the Giants to their dynasty? Maybe a Dave Dombrowski. What type of person would you like to see?
So I would favor actually splitting the difference if I could. I know for certain that I don't want Dave Dombrowski just because everywhere he's left, at least the last few places, Buster, it's been ugly, even though he has won, in fairness to him. But that's the last thing that the Phillies need right now, considering all the financial obligations that they have at present. That's not the person I want. And I think Matt Klentak's going to mean the Phillies probably zag away from that young analytics type. The person I want is Thad Levine. Now, they'd have to offer him the president of baseball ops title to get him away. Who knows if he would consider doing that? Obviously, we're living during a pandemic right now, and there are a lot of complicating factors. But I think he's the best person for the job because, to me, ultimately, what matters most is that the Phillies sort of realign this program. They can obviously spend money with everybody else. But as we know, as we've talked about on this podcast many times, you and me, that doesn't come anywhere close to guaranteeing any sort of results. We've seen that with the Angels. We've seen it with the Phillies. The Phillies need a general manager who can put a staff in place for player development, for scouting, and also, you know, sort of balance that perfectly with the analytics type. So that's the person I want, or the kind of person I want, as someone who has a track record in doing some of both. That's probably pie in the sky, but that's what I got for you.
All right, Hembo, thank you.
Later, boys.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. First up, our friend Amy Chapman at Amy R. Chapman writes in, with all of the talk about Hinch and Cora potentially managing again, perhaps as soon as next season, why hasn't Carlos Beltran been part of the conversation? Do you see him getting another chance?
Yeah, Amy, I'm curious about that. You know, I remember talking to Carlos during the postseason last year before he had really been connected with the Mets, and he was very specific about how it felt like it needed to be exactly the right job for him to manage. And the fact is, you know, he's lived in New York, he's played in New York, he played for the Mets, played for the Yankees, and I think that was part of the attraction for him. I can't say that my sense was that, yeah, if he got an offer to, say, manage the Marlins or manage some small market team sometime down the road, that would be something that he'd be interested in. And, you know, unlike Hinch and Cora, you know, Carlos Beltran, I mean, he certainly someone whose career is broader because of what he did as a player. He has, you know, things that he does off the field. I'm not sure if he's going to want to manage again, especially given the experience he had this time.
Next one up, we got Steve Miller at Steve.Miller writes in, what is your best guess when Major League Baseball will expand to 32 teams, and what two cities will have two new teams? And this generated a little bit of talk on Twitter yesterday, and I know you're going to say Nashville, so what other location would you pick?
I think when they look at the divisions, they need a team out west to balance out the divisions, which is why, and I think people talk about Portland. I don't know if baseball's view on Las Vegas has changed with what's going on with the Raiders. So I think Portland, for sure. You know, I hear Charlotte mentioned from time to time, but I mean, Nashville's the big one. The interesting thing too is I think for years, the perception was Major League Baseball needed to take care of the Tampa Bay and Oakland ballpark situations before they go into the expansion conversation. But given all the money that they've lost this year, I kind of wonder if that the expansion conversation might be accelerated, where you'd have owners say, boy, if we could sell an expansion team for, and I'm pulling a number out of the air, $1.5 billion or $1.2 billion that we can split among the teams, that'll offset some of the losses we've had.
Oh, that is quite intriguing. All right. Good stuff. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Please subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts, and enjoy the games. Four of them today. Very exciting.
But let's be clear here, Nashville would be awesome. And I'm biased, having lived there for 8 years, having gone to school there. That's it for today. My thanks to Dave Schoenfield, to Paul Mbikides, to Taylor Schwenk. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.